our parsha later on in Sefer Devarim, the holidays, Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur. One of the predominant themes is V'samachta b'chagecha, the idea of Simcha, Simchas Achag, Simchas Yantiv, particularly on Sukkot time, there's a Simcha Yisera, to quote the Rambam's language. And I wanted to ask a basic hashgafic question. What is the value of Simcha? Why does the Torah care that we're happy? You have the famous pasuk at the end of the Tochacha, right? Hashem brought the galus upon us. Hashem brought this catastrophic calamity, the tragedy upon us. Tachas lo avatim es Hashem lokechem b'simcha v'tuv leivav mirov kol. You didn't serve Hashem with Simcha. Why is Simcha so important? Shouldn't it be no greater than just a nice way of doing mitzvot? Is there any value in it? And if so, what is it? Why is Simcha so stressed, so emphasized by the Chumash? The mitzvot are designed for Simcha. Onig Shabbos is designed for Simcha. Many argue Bein Adam L'Chaveiro is not only about the type of person you become, but to create a society where people are just happy. I should love you, partially because my loving you is valuable for me, but partially because you want to feel loved. You want to be appreciated. These things make you happy. Half the Torah is oriented around Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. The fact that Chagim and Shabbos have such an emphasis of stress on Simcha and Oneg, why is that? Why does the Torah value that so much? I'd like to share with you a thought, which I believe to be correct. If I'd ask you how it's fair for anyone, religion, God, the Torah, the rabbis, religion, to expect you to commit 100%. When you don't believe 100%, none of us really believe 100%. We don't, take that back. You could believe 100%, but you don't know 100%. How do you expect God, how does God expect you to give 100% of your time, 100% of your energies, 100% of your efforts, 100% of your commitment to something you're not 100% sure is correct? This is probably one of the major questions many of us asked in high school, maybe even throughout Shana Aleph. We value, you know, serving God. I'm willing to, but like, am I willing to make myself absolutely crazy back and forth in this, you know? I'm not even sure it's right. So I'd like to share with you, I believe the best approach is God, in a certain sense, didn't want to give us a black and white world where we could see him crystally clear. God did not want us to have all the answers. God did not want it to be pushed black and white. We could say, I see God, that's it, game over, I'm committed. God wanted a gray world. The best proof is, we have one. God wanted there to be enough support and proof and philosophical argumentation to make the believer not have to take a big leap of faith. And God wanted the atheist to take equally great of a leap of faith. That's why you kind of choose if you believe in God or not. And if you think about it, most of us who do believe in God, and I imagine that's everyone in the room, made that choice. There's a lot of good arguments, there's a lot of good philosophy, there's a lot of good reasons and rhymes and, you know, rhyme and reason. A lot of good proofs and supports. At the end of the day, the supports are only so good a person has to say, okay, I'm taking a leap of faith. And people out there in the world who don't believe in God at some point in time have to take the same leap of faith. There's a lot of good questions. What about Tzadik V'Ra'la? Why is it fair for this and fair for that? You know, all sorts of, you know, questions and whatnot. At some point in time, you got to take a leap of faith and say, I believe in no God. There's no proof. The argumentation is not strong enough that beyond reasonable doubt, one should reject God. And the best proof that there's, you know, good reasons, lakan and lakan, is because there's a lot of brilliant people out in the world who believe in God, and there's a lot of brilliant people out in the world who don't. Just supportive of the fact that There's a lot of good reason to and a lot of good reason not to. And therefore, we kind of take a leap of faith. How does God expect us to do that? Take the greatest leap of faith. So I think God had two options. Option number one, God could have come out crystal clear, showed the entire world, or you, I am God. Here's a miracle, beyond reasonable doubt. I'm not sure it would have worked. But theoretically, I tell myself, you know, if God, if you can prove to me 100% without reasonable doubt, I may hate it. I may disenjoy religion, but you want to know what? If I'm 100% sure, I'll do whatever it is, because at the end of the day, 100%. I may dislike my life being religiously committed, but if he came out and showed me himself, if I was 100% sure, not 99, 100%, I'd be 100% committed. I'm not sure it's really true, but people tell themselves that. The other way to go, and I believe this is what God chose to do, is that Lamashal, if I would tell you to come over and to pick up my cell phone and hold it, would be the most meaningful, purposeful, wonderful thing you could do in the world, you probably would do it, if I really meant it. Why? You got nothing to lose. Takes 2 seconds. You got very little to lose. 2 seconds of your time. For such a great ultimate reward of living a meaningful, purposeful, wonderful life just for 2 seconds of holding onto a cell phone, sounds like a great deal. It's worth it. Now let's replace holding onto the cell phone. I, Jesse, what I'm telling you, the most wonderful, purposeful, meaningful thing you can do in your life is commit 100% to Torah mitzvot. There's not a person in this room who thinks it's less likely for that to be true than touch holding my cell phone. Everyone's convinced it's much more likely that the most meaningful, purposeful thing a person could do with their life is live a godly life. That's certainly more likely to be correct than holding onto a cell phone. Yet, that's a lot more difficult. We're a lot more hesitant to do that. Why? Because the sacrifice is great. To pick up the cell phone for 2 seconds is a very small sacrifice. There it is, I'm done. You lift it up, you put it down, you live the rest of your life, you do whatever you want. While living a committed life is much more difficult. The sacrifice is great. The stakes are up. It's difficult because I got to wake up at certain times and go to sleep at certain times and eat certain foods and not drive and not touch and not look at what I want to touch, drive, and look at. I got to dress the way I don't want to dress right now, and I got to talk in a way I don't want to talk right now. I'd rather just do what I want to do when I want to do it, not have anyone deal with me. I once heard someone talking about like driving in a car. You know, the seatbelt, when you don't put it on, it kind of goes beep, beep, beep. Imagine if every time you sinned, you did that, you'd like drive yourself crazy. I want to sin and not have the beep, beep, beep. I like driving in my car without my seatbelt, and I don't like the beep, beep, beeping. My kids, and I get my kids in the background. Ah, but your seatbelt's not on. I'm like, I heard the beeping, I know. Like, I want to sin. I want to live my life the way I want to do it. And like, I don't want God to be all over me. I just want a little bit of freedom. A lot of freedom. Complete freedom. But nonetheless, I somehow commit because I kind of play my odds. You know, if there's an 80% chance God exists, so I'll commit 80%. This way, things kind of work out. So how does God expect me to commit 100% something I only believe somewhere between 51 and 99%? I'd like to suggest that God was fully aware that the biggest impediment to full commitment, the biggest obstacle, the biggest hurdle to overcome to committing fully is the sacrifice, is the happiness. And instead of convincing you even more he exists, what God intended to do was enable you to find happiness within religion. I believe the ultimate goal of religion is to find both truth, purpose, and meaning on the one hand, and happiness, pleasure, enjoyment, and fulfillment on the other. The pasuk says, "Ivdu es Hashem," serve God, meaning, truth, purpose. But how should you do it? B'simcha. Bo lefanav, you should come in front of him, but birnana, with songs. There's a synthesis, there's a duality, there's a balance, a integration of the two things that people probably want more than anything else in life. The only two things man wants, I believe, in this world are truth and happiness. Everything else you've ever wanted, it's because you thought it would bring you to one of those two. Everything else is a means to one of those two ends. But I believe there are only two things you want, truth and happiness. I believe the goal of religion, and if executed properly, if one properly lives the religious life that I believe one should find themselves living a life of truth and happiness. You follow God, you listen to His word, that's truth. But so much of religion is designed to make sure you're happy along the way. So much of religion is designed to make sure you enjoy the process, you find it pleasuresome, you find it enjoyable. Ultimately, the reason why a person should lead a religious lifestyle is because it's the best chance you have at finding the things you want most, truth and happiness. I can't promise you religion's correct. I can't guarantee it. But I can tell you without it, you have no chance of finding a life that's meaningful or purposeful or truthful. If God didn't create the world and give it purpose, then there is no purpose. The whole thing's arbitrary, haphazard, circumstantial, just kind of, the whole world is just an accident. What purpose could there be? If the world just came into existence from nowhere, what meaning could there be? There's a famous British philosopher, I think his name was Hume, who said you cannot have an ought from an it. That if the world was created, you cannot have what ought to be, what ought not be. He's referring to the world of morality, which I think is also true. But it's all under the larger picture of direction. The world cannot have direction without God. The world cannot have purpose without God. The world cannot have morality without God. And I believe the reason why Torah emphasizes enjoyment and pleasure so much, that a person should sit back on Shabbos and enjoy life. On the Chagim, the midst of Simchas Yontif, to sit back and just enjoy the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world around us. The Torah values Simcha because it values what you value. It values because it helps you get to your own goals. Finding meaning and finding happiness. I believe God made us thirsty for two things more than anything else in the world. Truth and happiness. And God gave us religion to quench those two thirsts. Sometimes you look around at the world and you find people who are only looking for one and not the other. You look for a person who is very, very focused on finding happiness in life. It ends up, you know, hungover, wasted, high, you know, living out in the middle of the street with absolutely no purpose and just a real wreck, depressed. And you wonder, like, what happened to the guy? And he's like, I was only looking to have happiness, only looking to party, only looking for fun, and I found nothing. Sometimes you find a person who values nothing but truth. Intellectual honesty and nothing but. Very often these people, you picture like a professor from Yale with a pipe sitting down brooding over a philosophical, who knows what, mathematical question, quandary, difficulty, who knows what. And sometimes you find these are like, you know, they're just depressed and lonely. And their depression and loneliness skews their perspective, creates a pejorative, negative image to the world. They're just, everything is not bad. Nothing is good. The whole world is fake. I'm the only one that's right and that's true and that's real and that's smart. Most of us in our lives are looking to synthesize truth and happiness. Most of us in our lives, the decisions we make are based upon finding truth and finding happiness. In the world of Hasidus, the Baal Shem Tov, maybe even Rav Nachman Breslov, even more so, was the paradigm of Simcha. I think Rav Nachman Breslov coined the phrase, mitzvah gedola liot b'simcha. Now that's the goal. You see, Breslov is these Nachman guys, Simcha, happiness. And the Kutzker Rebbe, by contrast, was about truth. Better to take off your mask and do one real mitzvah because God said so, than all the fake mitzvahs we do day in and day out because we don't want to feel guilty if we don't, and because of peer pressure and social pressure, and we've become accustomed to doing them. Just one mitzvah because God said do so. The Kutzker Rebbe was a real paradigm of truth. At the end of his life, for the last 19, he began to meditate and focus on God for the last 19, not seconds, and not minutes, and not even hours, not even days, not even weeks, and not even months. But for 19 years, for 19 years, he focused on God. Try your best doing that for like 19 minutes. 19 years. Supposedly, I didn't talk, they just focused on God because he felt he had lost a sense of genuineness, of sincerity, of yashrus, of emes. We make most of our decisions based upon truth and happiness. I imagine people came here to Harova for two reasons. A, they thought that they'd be happy here. Very few people came thinking they'd be miserable. You probably would not have come if you thought you'd be unhappy. Number one. And number two, if you didn't think that there was meaning, purpose, value, truth into what you're studying, into what you're learning, into the Torah, you probably would not have come. You came here because you thought it'd bring you truth and happiness, and for the most part, that's how we make all of our decisions in life. We think this will bring us a little more truth, a little more happiness, and people waver back and forth. I always thought a great nafka mina case, a test case, which you value, what do you value more, truth or happiness? If you wanted to know, I always thought the Matrix test would be the best test to take. I never saw the movie, but people tell me it's the Matrix. Let me tell you what I mean. If I told you I was going to put you in a coffin, in a box, and you're going to lay there the rest of your life, but you'll live into a you'll move into a virtual reality. You'll hook up some, you know, you'll take the pill in the Matrix, that's what they say. You take a pill, you leave your life, you dream the rest of your life, and you could be anyone and anything, anywhere you want to. You can make up your own life. You could be the wealthiest, prettiest, smartest, anything you could think of. Anything you'd want to be, you could be. Frumist, full religious commitment while at the same time, who knows what, anything you wanted to be. Would you take the pill and go in? There are probably people in the room who would, and probably people in the world who wouldn't, in this room who wouldn't. It's an excellent question. And let's say I'll even up the stakes. If you took the pill, you wouldn't even know you took it. And for that matter, there's a good chance you took it 20 minutes ago and don't even know you took it and you already did it. Meaning, I can't even promise you the life we live. I can't even promise you the life we live isn't that. I can just tell you, probably it's not, doesn't feel like it, but like it wouldn't have felt it otherwise. Would you take the pill, just out of raising it, how many people would take the pill? How many people would take, just out of curiosity, how many people take the pill and go into that box and live the rest of their life the way they want to from here on out, not even knowing that they took the pill?
Wait, I don't know, I have to think about it.
Well, any way you want it. And just hang out. I'll try to keep this simple. I'll know you'll do it by putting up your hand or not, everyone's saying, then I won't know. You know, just how many people would take the pill, put themselves in that box, and live any future lifestyle that they want? Raise your hand if you would. Raise your hand if you wouldn't. And the majority still don't know. Okay. I think this case boils down to whether or not you value truth more than happiness or vice versa, meaning I'm offering you the ultimate happiness in that box, but this is not a real life. Not, I think, you know, me personally, I probably would not do it because I honestly believe that my life in this world is purposeful, is meaningful. And I would be living a dream the rest of my life. Now, I'd be happy and I wouldn't even know that, but I don't want to just live a dream. I want to actually do something. Each their own. But my point is that people are looking for truth and happiness. People are looking to find truth, people are looking to find happiness. I believe the Torah's value of truth is very self-evident. What I tried to do today, a little bit, is explain the value of happiness.